AI is really what's going to define the future. How can AI clear your plate of those low-value things so that you can spend more time doing things that only humans can do?
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens. With all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place, start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites, or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started. Get this, 1 in 4 employees are now using AI at work. It's a significant jump from the adoptions that we've seen from 2023. So how are businesses leveraging AI in the workplace? Well, I found out because we sat down with Christina Janzer. She's the SVP of Research and Analytics at Slack. And we discussed how businesses are embracing AI to increase productivity, make data-driven decisions, drive innovation, and how Slack AI is enabling people to work smarter and faster. Christina was an amazing guest, and I really enjoyed speaking with her. Some of the data and research she has is pretty incredible, especially if you're an entrepreneur or business person and want to know the future of the workplace.
Christina, thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of How Success Happens. It's so great to have you here and to talk to you, especially someone who has so much experience within technology. And I wanted to start by asking you about what that was like growing up. Were you always into tech? Were you like a techie little kid?
I love this question. First, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and to chat about all things technology. You know, my answer is going to be a little bit disappointing because I was not the kid who was obsessed with technology. I mean, I was pretty excited about, you know, going online and checking my email for the first time. I wasn't that kid who was, you know, figuring out how to code and doing all those cool things. But and it's funny because my dad was a lawyer. And so I just thought that I would be a lawyer too, and that we would have like a Holsbury and Holsbury office together, right? I was not obsessed with technology as a young kid.
You know, it's interesting because if you look at your career and where you are now, Slack, and you've been there for a bit, and we'll talk about that. But you started, or first companies was Facebook. So you've really focused on technology, so to speak. Is there something about technology in that area, that business? You know, you don't have to be a programmer to get excited, but that really you can trace back maybe to when you were younger?
Yeah. I do think that as a young kid, I was always very observant and curious, right? I was always so interested to understand the world around me, to understand people, to understand why people did the things that they did. And I was the little quiet kid in the corner who was just sort of watching how things were happening. And I actually think that that has really carried through to the job that I have today. And, you know, there was a class that I took in college that I was part of the product design major. It was called Need Finding, and it was all about really understanding people, understanding their needs, understanding their challenges. And I found that class so fascinating. And I think that's probably the class that is closest to what I do today, right? Which is just really understanding the world, understanding people, understanding products, and really deeply figuring out what are the challenges that we're trying to solve with the technology that we're building. Right. And that has really carried through to where I am today. The job that I have today didn't really exist when I first started, but that's sort of how I see my career sort of building into what it is today.
Yeah. Tell us about the job that you have today. And I think you have now been at Slack, is it 8 years?
Yeah, just about 8 years. I oversee the research and analytics group at Slack. And what we're really responsible for is, overall, we want to make work better. And in order to make work better, we really need to deeply understand the challenges that people are experiencing. We really need to understand the opportunities that we have to make work better. And so we do that by doing deep research and data science work to understand people and understand challenges. And so the idea is, like, you cannot build a product unless you understand the problems that you're trying to solve and the customers that you're trying to serve, right? It sounds very simple, but it doesn't always happen. And so the work that my team does is we research people, we research work, we research product to make sure that we're building the right things and to make sure that the things that we build are actually solving the problems that we've identified. When I first started my career, the job that I have today didn't really exist in the way that it is today. When I first started, so like you mentioned before, I started my career at Facebook. I would like to say that I knew that Facebook was going to be this big thing. It didn't quite happen that way. I did join that company very, very early on. You know, at the time, research did not exist in the company. There was no idea of user research. And I joined in a customer support role. And I was responsible for answering all of the emails that users wrote in to ask about Facebook. So sometimes they wrote because they didn't understand how to use it. In the early days, they wrote in because the college that they attended was not allowed to be on Facebook yet. And so they said, hey, can you add University of Arizona so that I can join Facebook? Because all of my friends are using it too.
That's and amazing.
So, you know, it was very different times back then. But what was really interesting and what I found so fascinating, again, is that people, it was a viewpoint into how people were feeling about their experience on Facebook, right? They were asking questions. They were frustrated about this feature. They wanted this other feature. And so what I started to do is I started to take all of that feedback back to the product team and say, hey, like, let's listen to the people who are actually using our product. Let's incorporate all of that feedback into how we're actually thinking about building it. And, you know, I started to like learn a little bit more about this idea of user research and basically made the case like, hey, we need to start a user research team at Facebook. We're building the product blind. We need to better understand the people that we're trying to serve. Let's start this team. And I was sort of given that permission to start the team. And then I grew it from there. Over time, like sort of core of what I wanted that team to be hasn't changed. It's all about understanding the people that we're trying to serve. And the ways in which we understood would, like, you know, become more mature over time and become more rigorous over time. But that sort of core value was always the same.
It's super interesting just how you said it, like in terms of now I understand more of where you are, why you're there, from that little girl that was in the corner always listening and, you know, right, taking in information. And that really is very hard for a lot of people. You know, you were very good at that. And then understanding, I'm sure, how to then go implement it. How was that? So you would get all of this feedback and research, and then I assume you'd work with the product team to implement changes. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so that experience is the most fun part, right? Because the fun part is when you actually implement it to make somebody's life better, right? You know, that part is very collaborative because I don't have the skills to build the product. I'm not the engineer who's coding it. So I have to then influence the engineer who's coding it to actually act on it. And so that part becomes really, really collaborative because it's how can we sort of help build empathy for the people that we're building for? How can we help the people who are actually building the product feel the way that our customers do so that they feel excited to actually implement it? And so it becomes a really collaborative process. A lot of influence is involved. But, you know, at the end of the day, the data speaks for itself, right? And so if you can sort of tell the story of a customer on their behalf, it's a really powerful thing to be able to do.
Tell us about Slack and joining Slack. How did that come about?
You know, through my career, I've had some incredible mentors. And I mentioned that I've always sort of been like observant and curious about the world. But I think another sort of aspect of my career is I've always been excited to solve problems and find opportunities, right? And so, you know, I'm not waiting for people to say, to give me permission to go do this. I say, no, we need to create a user research team. So I'm going to go create it. Caring about the customer, deeply understanding them, but then just like going to solve those problems. You know, I had an incredible experience at Facebook. I was there for 11 years and it was all about like, okay, what is the next problem that I can go solve? And I'm just going to go solve it. At a certain point, you kind of like reach the end of that path. And so I really was excited to think about going to another company and having the opportunity to build another team. I, you know, by the time I left Facebook, it was quite large. And I really wanted to sort of have that opportunity to build something from scratch again. You know, through sort of some of my mentors, like I started to talk about what are the interesting companies that are out there. And Slack just kept coming up as like, this is a really, it's enterprise, which is a little bit different than what I was used to. But it's a company that cares so deeply about its customers. And that was something that was really important to me. And also, it was a company that was ready to invest in user research. And so, you know, I basically had one conversation with the chief product officer at the time. And, you know, after 10 minutes with her, I was like, oh, I would work for you in a second. I think it really came back to, you know, Slack was a company that cared deeply about its customers. It was very clear from all the conversations that I had. And that was something that really mattered to me. So it felt like a really great fit.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because when you do talk about Slack, really, you know, it started as kind of a workplace messaging tool and it's changed into more, it seems like a productivity platform. And it's all about work and people working together. So it makes sense that you would probably have a strong culture there. But tell us about how it did start from that messaging and now what it's become, because I assume you've really been there from those beginnings to where you are now with the product.
When I think about Slack's evolution and why I am still so excited to be at Slack, is Slack's priority has always been its customers. That has been there from the start. And, you know, that is the type of environment where my type of role really thrives, because I'm surrounded by people who care deeply about their customers. And my group is helping people better understand the problems that they're having and the challenges that they're experiencing. And so that priority has never shifted since I started at Slack, which I think is why I remain so excited about working here. And so, you know, the feedback that customers have, their needs, their challenges, all of that really helps us build products that people can really intuitively use throughout their days. And so, you know, part of how we sort of, you know, do that is by continuing to focus on our customers. And I'll give you an example of this because, you know, getting feedback from customers has helped us evolve and add new features over time, right? And, you know, a great example of this is the world sort of shut down during COVID, right? And we were all really struggling with how are we going to collaborate? How are we going to work together? For many companies, they were, you know, working from home. They never had before. And it was like, how am I going to get done? I'm not sitting in the office next to people anymore. And, you know, that was a really important time for my team to really understand how were people feeling and what were the big challenges that they were experiencing. And, you know, the research like really helped us think about new features that we wanted to introduce to Slack. Like huddles was something that didn't exist before. And it felt like this really big need was sort of appearing based on what customers were telling us. Clips, again, that was another thing that we wanted people to be able to sort of continue to work asynchronously, but be able to have that sort of face-to-face connection, where now I use Clips all the time to send a quick 5-minute clip to my team saying, hey, this is what's top of mind for me. Like, look at my face. We can like sort of connect in that way. And so all of that has really stemmed from deeply understanding our customers and making sure that the product continues to evolve to fit their needs, because their needs are going to change every day as work continues to change.
Yeah, you reminded me of a story that probably took place about 4 years ago when the business I had started, we acquired a company and they could not function without Slack. And that's when we first implemented it. And I just remember a woman who runs our production team saying, hey, do you want to huddle? And I was like, huh? And then we did it. And I was like, this is amazing. Like it was really incredible, you know, and some of the features we were blown away. And now I can tell you as a company, it's incredible how much it means to our business. I imagine you must hear that all the time from customers and the feedback you get.
Yeah. And I think that's something that there is this deep customer love that people feel for Slack, right? And that comes from sort of like our craft and like we build product in a very thoughtful way, right? Like we don't want to be lumped in with enterprise software, right? Like we are a delightful tool, and that's something that's really important to us. So just really quickly though on Huddles. So, you know, so much of our research that we do, you know, is around, you know, how much time people waste in meetings and like, you know, like the whole meeting culture is so interesting. Like we could talk for hours. And, you know, I think what's really interesting is we're sort of in this world where like meetings are like 30 minutes or an hour, like that's sort of the default. And you fill that amount of time, right? So like if we set up a 30 minute meeting, we will figure out how to fill that entire 30 minutes, even if we could have accomplished it in 10 minutes. And the huddle actually like is so much more lightweight that what we actually see is that the average huddle time is around 11 or 12 minutes. When we huddle, we just get what we need to get done and then we say goodbye, right? It has sort of like a different culture around it, right? And so you think about what would the world look like if we replaced 30-minute Zoom meetings with a 12-minute huddle? Hey, that's a lot of time that we would get back. And, you know, that doesn't work for everything, but I think it's really interesting to think about some of like the norms that have developed in our workplace culture and how can we sort of break free from some of those.
No, especially when you think about the huddle and think about productivity and just saving that, you know, 20 minutes, like you just said there, 19 minutes, whatever it might be for working. And that's what, you know, I found, at least initially, because I fought it. And initially, like I didn't, you know, this was the first time we were using Slack. Of course, I had heard about it, saw how many companies were using it. And the company we acquired was just like, I am telling you, this helps. This has worked so well for us. And it's really incredible because once we started getting comfortable and utilizing it, we're like, of course we're going to use it. It was amazing in that respect. What was really amazing to me was just the level of how much these employees were never going to let go of utilizing it, which I'm sure you're glad to hear, but you know, it just showed you what it meant to them. And then I really started turning onto it and realizing what it could do. And you know, I wanna ask you now, because it's super interesting what you do in terms of the research and the knowledge you must have. And we all know now there's this thing called AI, and it's changing, or at least what everyone is saying, and I can see it myself, it's changing the way we all do work. It's changing work, changing the world. What is your take and Slack's take and ideas and thoughts around AI and the workplace?
I have so many thoughts about AI. Before I get to AI though, just really quickly on the point you were making about like the love that people have for Slack and like not wanting to take it away. That's actually something that we measure over time. So what we actually measure over time is like how people would feel if Slack was taken away, because our bar is that if people are really upset that Slack is taken away, then we are being successful. It's not just like it's an okay tool that like does the job. No. We want people to feel such deep love that if Slack was taken away, they would be visibly upset. And so that's actually something that we track over time. And I think that sort of speaks to the bar that we have for the product that we're providing to people.
Well, I got to be honest, because I tried to do that because I didn't understand, you know, I couldn't believe from this group, just there was no way they were letting it go. And they rather taught us to utilize it. And to this day, it's amazing because it's our main communication tool within the business. But when I first learned about it and saw it, it was like, probably be glad to hear this too, just the incredible amount of love for it and what it was doing. They couldn't change. And now, you know, understanding, utilizing 4 years, I understand why.
Yeah. Okay. So back to AI. And, you know, we're obviously in the middle of an AI revolution, right? Like everyone is talking about AI. And so we've been doing a lot of research to sort of understand what's going on and how people are feeling about it. And what's really interesting, actually, is that we're definitely in a little bit of a bubble, or at least I'm in a bubble. And so like everywhere I go, people are talking about AI. When you look across the world, across sort of, you know, globally, what we see is about 1 in 4 people are actually using AI at work. So in some ways, we're still pretty early on in this AI journey, which is actually really exciting because we still have a lot of defining to do and a lot of figuring out to do. And it hasn't already happened, right? So we're still able to influence what that's going to look like over time. But what I get really excited about is one of the things that we've learned from our research is that people waste about 41% of their time on what I would call work of work. So this is sort of like low value, mundane, repetitive tasks. These are the things that we all have to do as part of our jobs, but aren't particularly exciting, or, you know, maybe my skill set is not really well suited to do them, right? This could be like reporting data in different systems. It could be summarizing meeting notes. It could be filing expense reports, right? It's like that work of work that everyone has to do. When you look at that number, my team is wasting 41% of their time on work of work. Like, I am horrified as a leader, right? Like, that is an awful thing to know, right? And so that to me is the opportunity that AI really can help with. And, you know, that's not going to happen overnight, but like AI has the potential to help reduce that work of work and to help people focus on the things that they are best suited to do, the things that only humans can do, the things that only me as a researcher can do, right? And I think that's what makes this like idea of AI so exciting. And that's what I really focus on, is how can AI clear your plate of those low value things so that you can spend more time doing things that only humans can do. So that's sort of that's where I'll start. But like, I have, you know, so much excitement and optimism for AI. And it really stems from this big opportunity that I see that it presents us with.
So you see this opportunity and you're doing the research in terms of what you're thinking about, in terms of what Slack is thinking about.
Yeah.
Can you share some of those things now? Yeah. I know some might be confidential, but.
Yeah. I mean, I won't share all the confidential stuff. We're doing all this research to make sure that when we're building AI into Slack, we're doing it in a really thoughtful way, in a way that really addresses how people are feeling. Because the reality is, like, I personally am very excited, but people have concerns about AI, as you can imagine. Those concerns are legitimate, and we need to listen to those concerns. And so one example is that, you know, people are really thinking about like reliability and accuracy. And how do they know that they can actually trust the results of their AI bot? We also know that there's a lot of privacy and trust sort of related concerns, right? So it's important that we have all of those concerns top of mind as we think about our strategy here. The other thing that we pay a lot of attention to is like, what are the top use cases that people are getting the most value from AI? And so we start to see this list of 3 kind of percolate to the top. So one of them is around summarization. Another one is around automating workflows. And another one is around researching topics. And so those keep coming to the top as things that people are getting a ton of value from AI. And so those are things that are really top of mind as we think about how we're going to address this at Slack. You know, we're very thoughtful about making sure that we're not spreading ourselves too thin. We're not trying to solve everything at once, but we're really focusing on the things that are going to provide the most customer value. And so the things that we have focused our initial efforts on for Slack AI are around those top things that I talked about, around summarization as the first example. So you use Slack. I'll give you an example of how this can work. So last week I was on PTO. I went to Texas. I went to see the eclipse. It was super fun. But I came back and I had a whole week's worth of channels and messages to catch up with, right? That is hundreds and hundreds of messages that I need to catch up with. That would historically take me hours. Like I would usually have like a whole day blocked off to like catch up on Slack. Now what we've added via Slack AI is something called channel recaps. So I can go into a channel and I can click the AI button and it recaps everything that I missed in that channel in a matter of seconds into a really nice summarization. And so rather than spending hours and hours catching up with all of the messages that I missed, I can spend 5 minutes reviewing that summary and being caught up on the most important things. And then I can get back to my actual work. And so we've been really intentional about what are the top challenges that people are facing? What's going to add the most value in the flow of work, right? Because people spend all of their time in Slack. And so that's one example. Another example is, you know, what I mentioned as another of those top use cases is sort of researching, right? And so the version of researching in Slack is a wealth of information, right? You have years, like depending on your company, you have years and years of channels and messages and history. There's so much historical context in Slack, but you have to find it. You have to search for it. And so another of the features that we have introduced with Slack AI is searching answers. And so what might have historically been a little bit challenging with, like, you know, knowing the right keywords and knowing like which channels to search in, et cetera, you can just type a natural language question. So tell me everything that's happening with, you know, customer X. And it will bring all of the relevant messages and content in a nice, quick summary for you in the matter of seconds. Think about all of that time that you're saving by using Slack AI, right? And that's awesome. Super, super, super powerful.
That is unbelievable. All this stuff excites me, you know, when you talk about AI and like you just said it prior, like people are like freaking out. But when I hear this stuff, this is what can make small businesses, medium-sized, large, everyone more productive. And that's what's great. You know, what you just said, like the summary and understanding, that's the biggest thing. Like, that's to me incredible, because I would waste hours going through, you know, past emails or past whatever it might be to learn more about the client.
Right.
I love that.
I think there's two key things here. One is that, you know, people are sort of anxious about AI. I think it's like 86% of executives are just like stressed about like, how am I going to incorporate AI? Everyone's incorporating AI. I don't know what to do. I think what's super powerful about Slack AI is it's in the flow of work, right? It's not a separate tool that you have to figure out, what am I going to do? It's like, no, you're already in Slack reading your messages. We're just going to make that so much easier. And I think that's powerful because we're meeting customers where they are. And we're addressing like the biggest challenges that they have. And so again, this comes from sort of this deep understanding of our customers and of the problems that they are experiencing. And then the second thing is, you know, I did mention, like, I think it's smart that people have concerns about AI, right? And like, it's smart for us to understand those concerns and to address those concerns. But one of the concerns that people have is around sort of this trust and reliability. So I'm sure you've played with your own sort of like GPTs or ChatGPT, whatever, and you've probably experienced like hallucinations, right? Where you get just like a ridiculous response and you're like, okay, well, this is what it says for this question. How am I ever going to trust it? Especially in the context of work, right?
Yeah.
Trust is so, so important. And so one of the things, I mean, and that has been sort of built into our design process. But one of the things, just as a quick example, is we've included citations. So when Slack AI sort of produces this like nice summary for you, like let's say it's a bullet point, like three bullet points, there will be a little bracket where you can say, you can click to see where that came from. So you can always track back to the original source if you want to double check and just feel more confident that, okay, when it says that like the customer's biggest challenge is X, let me go see a little bit more about where that came from so that I can trust it a little bit more, or so I can just get more context, right? And so I think those little details and how we've built the product are all addressing the challenges that we've identified to make sure that people can use AI in a way that's actually going to be reliable and trusted.
Yeah, I mean, just what you said there, that makes perfect sense, like to have that and understanding from what your job is and learning from all of your clients and users, you understand what their concerns are, which is so cool. But yeah, for me, right then and there, like, yes, of course, I jumped on ChatGPT, and then you get stuff that's kind of like, what? Because with what you're doing and with having that, being able to go back and to see where that came from, to understand, gives you that confidence, which is so great, because then it could really be super powerful. You don't have to worry about that aspect. And I know we're talking about AI. I have to ask you one question, because hybrid work, and I want to preface this by saying no one has ever given me the answer of what it's going to look like, how this is all going to play out, how it's played out. I would love to know from your research, from your thoughts, from everything you've done at Slack, a couple things. One is, how is this? Are people going back into the office? Are they not? Are they more productive in the office, out of the office? What is going to be the new norm? I'd love to know your thoughts.
Yeah, let's talk about it. So I believe that the future of work is distributed. And we see a lot of evidence from our data that flexibility leads to productivity, right? So flexibility in terms of where you work, but even more important than where you work is when you work. So that schedule flexibility is really critical. And, you know, when you think about teams being distributed in different offices in different time zones, it kind of makes sense that having some flexibility for your schedule makes sense, right? But I think, you know, when we look at the data, people who have flexible schedules are able to focus more, they're able to be more productive, right? And so when you have that flexibility to have that deep focus work, you're going to be more productive. When I think about the future of work, I think that we are wasting a lot of time talking about, are you in the office? Are you at home? What I think is the important conversation to have is not where you work, but how you work. I would love for people, instead of thinking about, you know, forcing people to work in a certain location, to really invest that time in like investing in new technologies. Like when you think about, we just talked about AI, like that has so much potential to help people improve their productivity. And what we see is like, we're still so early on in that journey. Executives are still really struggling with, how do I actually incorporate this into my strategy? And what we see in our data is that 43% of desk workers have received zero guidelines for how they should be thinking about using AI. And we know that people who have guidelines and who have that sort of, those sort of like structures in place are 6 times more likely to have experimented with AI. And so those are the types of things that I think we need to be spending our time focused on, is how are we working together? What are the tools and technologies that we're using to enable the distributed workforce that we're in? And, you know, I think that we're going to be distributed. That's what people want. That's where the talent really wants to be. And so that's the future. And so if we kind of put a rest to that conversation and focus on like improving how we work, I think that's really where we're going to see the productivity gains. I don't know if that's the answer that you're looking for or that you're not getting, but that's my answer.
But you're absolutely right in terms of, for businesses and from, you know, the interviews I've done and have seen these businesses, the ones that do the best or have the best cultures, from what I've seen over the past 4 years, it does come down to the distributed work model and being able to work from, it's about getting the job done. It really doesn't matter about where you are. You know, like I look at my company, which is a 25-person company, we're all over the country. That never would have happened prior.
Right.
Thankfully for Slack, and, you know, we're able to communicate with each other just very easily. And without these technologies, like, we never would have been able to do that, which actually I want to ask you, did you ever imagine from, let's just go back 8 years from Slack, not even back to whenever, I mean, that this is where we'd be, this would be how the current workplace would exist, you know, as it does today. What were your thoughts then? And then what are your thoughts now?
I think I would be lying if I said that I imagined us being here today, you know, just 5 years ago, pre-COVID, right? Like pre-COVID, I was in the office every single day. And like our way of working was very office centric. That said, even pre-COVID, you know, Slack, probably not surprisingly, like we lived on Slack. Slack was how we worked together and how we communicated. So even though we were in the office together, we really relied on Slack as the place that brought everyone together. Because even though we were in the office together, there were people in New York or there were people in other offices, right? And so this idea that the office used to be something that would actually bring everyone together, it wasn't actually that way, right? Because you're on different floors or you're in different offices. I think that, you know, we learned really quickly how powerful it is to have some sort of digital headquarters that brings everyone together. I think when I think about sort of like the future, I really think that Slack is going to continue to be the digital collaboration that's going to be powered by AI, right? And I think AI is really what's going to define the future. And like I mentioned before, we're so early on in that journey that we have so much left to figure out about what role it's actually going to play. And I think we have a lot of work to do to actually think about it in a much bigger way than we are today. And I think, you know, I think we're very limited in our thinking about what AI can be today. And I think we need to do so much more experimenting to really find the true power that it's going to enable us in the future. I think we're making really, really good progress. But seeing that, like, so many people are still not using it yet, people haven't started really experimenting with it. One of the things that I encourage companies to do all the time is give your employees time and space to really experiment with how they can use AI for their specific role, right? Because there's not going to be a one size fits all where everyone uses AI this exact way and like that's what it's going to help replace, right? No. You have to be really creative about thinking about what can I do with AI as a researcher versus what might you do as a marketer or whatever it is. One of the really interesting pieces of data that we're looking at is that the promise is that AI is going to free your time, right? And the question that we ask people is, okay, if you have free time suddenly that AI has helped you achieve, what would you do with that free time? What do you think people say?
Knowing people in general, if they could free up their time through AI, through the help of AI, it would be something potentially other than work.
So I wish that was what people said, because that would be incredible, right? Like maybe you spend all that free time volunteering,
yes,
or contributing to other causes that are going to help make the world better. No. The top thing that people would use that time for is more admin time at work. So they're going to get from AI, they're going to use it and they're going to replace it with more work. That is not what I want to see. And that is an early signal that we're getting from our research, but we still have time to fix it, right? So how can we sort of encourage people to use that time either for more innovative things at work or more creative things that are going to solve big problems that you normally wouldn't have time to solve or something else, right? Like my point is that we're still so early on in this journey. We still have a lot to figure out and we have a lot to sort of influence when we think about what do we want the future of work to look like with AI and what is the best case scenario that we could imagine. And we still have time to like build that, right? And that to me is really exciting.
Just getting back to that thought, like when you talked about the AI, the summary feature that you have now with Slack in terms of taking all those emails when you went to go check out the eclipse and came back and you're bombarded, the amount of hours, the time you save, I mean, that's incredible, because I do in my role, I would look at that as being able to then, you know, for me, my answer to that, if it's work related, what else do I do, is thinking about bigger picture ideas, thinking about stuff that I never get to because I'm going through 150 emails, or I have to send 150 emails, or you know, I'm even if I'm using like a ChatGPT with your other feature, that I'm making sure that it's coming from a proper source. The great thing about your product is that it tells me that, which is important, which I love the fact that you guys continue to really, especially from your job, listen to the folks that are using the product and making it so that they feel much more comfortable with it and continue to use it. And the fact that only 1 in 4 people right now are using AI is really incredible. I would think, you know, I do think we're at the beginning of a situation where, you know, people are hesitant. They don't know how, they don't know what they should be doing. But it sounds like for what you're doing, you're making it very easy, at least by implementing it into your existing system, that it will make it a lot easier for people to figure out how to really utilize this.
Yeah. And I think that that's been very key to our approach. So if you sort of take all of these like data points together, it's like, first of all, people feel stressed about AI. They know that it's something that they need to do. They don't know how. They don't know if they're allowed to, like, if I didn't work at Slack, if I worked at another company, I would feel uncomfortable using AI. I wouldn't know if I could put my customer data into ChatGPT, right? Like if someone doesn't tell me what I'm allowed to do, I'm going to feel really, you know, really uncomfortable doing that. And so giving people that guidance on like, yes, use this tool for this, don't use customer data, whatever the rules are, like people need that clarity. They also need sort of like this, the space to actually learn and experiment. And if they don't feel like they have the time in their day to do that, they're not going to do that. They're just going to continue to do, you know, their normal job. But then to the point that you made earlier, I think what we've been really focused on at Slack is like meeting people where they are, not just, you know, physically, but Slack is where people work. And so implementing AI into where people work is very seamless, right? It's not an additional tool you need to learn. It's just right there. And it's just going to make your Slack experience so much better. But the other thing in terms of meeting people where they are is like meeting people where they are in terms of like their comfort with AI, right? And so like you don't need to be a prompt engineer in order to use Slack AI, right? We're meeting you where you are, which is somebody who has a question and just wants to type their question into search and get the answer that they want, or just wants to summarize that week long worth of messages that you missed because you're on PTO, right? It's like there's no additional training that you need to go through, which I think is really powerful because I think for many, AI feels out of reach because they don't feel like they are skilled in AI yet.
Yeah, 100%. I think if you don't have, let's say, a product or, you know, a communication tool or platform like Slack or anything that's utilized that you're using already within the company, then it's very difficult. Because if you're thinking, there's no, like you said, there's no structure, like how should I, well, everyone just knows ChatGPT, right? And right. We've talked about some of the issues there and also not having the structure where, like, I go back to your example of the summary of the emails, meeting people where they are, that's very key for more people to get comfortable and more companies to get comfortable. And that's where I see the huge opportunity for productivity.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's two. So Slack has a series of product principles that sort of guide how we think about building product. And there's two that I think a lot of them are my favorites, but two of them, one of them is don't make me think. You should not have to like, you know, have an expert degree in order to use Slack. Like it should just be intuitive and easy, right? Like you don't want people to have to think more than they already do at work. Just like the product should just be easy. And the second one is called be a great host, right? Which means that people should just feel happy and at ease with the product, right? It shouldn't cause additional stress. They shouldn't like wonder if they are able to trust it, right? And I think those have been really, really key as we think about how to build AI, which can feel like a big, scary thing, but really doesn't have to if you do it sort of with those principles in mind.
I love that. And, you know, before I let you go, I want to ask you one question. If you were to look ahead, I know it's so hard because things are changing so quickly. And I don't know if anyone knows this, but I'm going to ask you, if you look down the road, I'm just talking 3 years, 5 years with what AI can do, where do you think the biggest opportunities are in the workplace with AI?
I mean, I think it really goes back to the big opportunity I see with AI is that it's going to help replace all of that work that all of us hate to do, right? And it's going to, if we do a good job of like really not waiting to see what AI does to us, but really crafting that and leading that, it's going to free us to do the work that we really love, right? And I think it's going to make work more fulfilling. I think it's going to make work more joyful. I think it's going to make work more creative. And that makes me really excited.
You know, that's totally true. Just when I think about it and what I've utilized it for and within Slack and some of these things, and I like the term taking out the work and being able to be creative, think big picture, ideas. That's what everyone loves for the most part about their jobs when they're able to do that. So it really is incredible what AI's done. It's great how you are incorporating it into Slack. I think it makes it easier for people to start utilizing it. Kudos to you. And I know we're going to continue using Slack because I'll have a riot here and a lot of people quitting if we don't. So, Christina, it has been a pleasure speaking with you. I learned so much, and best of luck to you. And best of luck to Slack and the team, and continue what you're doing, because whatever it is, my team has drank the Kool-Aid.
I love to hear it. This was really fun. Thank you so much.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.